But let's give a warm Bryan College Station welcome to Dr. Bob Nichols. Wife Laura's been with us this weekend ministering to the family. We've got Becca Stoney also with us from San Antonio. It's always a treat to have them. So, Bob, take it away.
Hey, good to be with you. You okay? Everybody doing good? I told the group we had yesterday that this morning I was probably going, I always reserve the right to change. And actually, I was locked in on another message. I was going to change on you, but I want to talk to you about the number one breacher. Do you know the word breach? Breacher? That which breaks open or divides relationships, especially in marriages, but definitely not exclusively to marriages. What do you think that might be? Say again? Yeah? Talk, communication? Money, money's the number one in the first 2 years of marriage. I'm getting an echo on myself. Are you getting the echo? Okay. He'll work it out. Yeah, those are all good. They're not the number one. Of course, I'm kind of going at something that's more of a principle. Communication's huge. Finances are huge. The number one breacher, the number one causes more division in marriages. Number one. Are in covert, insidious judgments. Did you hear those words? Now, I'm a teacher, so I'm choosing words very carefully. Covert, what does that mean? Basically, it means hidden, not real recognizable. Insidious, they're devious, little judgments. How many of you think God's concerned with your heart? Okay. The heart is this mysterious container of human emotions. It's the place that we feel both elation, joy, despair, and pain. The health of your heart is most clearly seen in the dynamic of relationships. In other words, in your relationships, what's really inside of you will tend to come to the surface. During those times, we make a decision. Another makes a decision. Pressures, circumstances, and they cause the heart to be wounded. How do you know you have a wound in your heart? How do you know you're wounded anyway? It hurts. You have pain. How many of you have experienced some pain in your heart during this last year? All right. Now, what you do with that pain is really huge. Usually the pain causes us to evaluate the rightness and the wrongness of a situation. And if we deem ourselves to be right, any of you like being right? You can raise your hand for your spouse in that case. and the other person's wrong. Now, I'm talking slow and pausing, not because I don't know what to say, but because I want you to track and think with me. We have pain. I think I'm right and they're wrong. And most frequently, what we do with that rightness is we make a judgment. And it is a judgment that turns a wound into an offense. Any of you ever been offended? Rest of you have a problem with lying. Are y'all okay? You tracking with me? Okay, kind of give me a little nod on your head. Probably the most popular verse on judgments is Matthew 7, verses 1 and 2. It says, do not judge, so you'll not be judged, for in the way that you judge, by the manner, by the standard that you judge, it will be measured out to you. All right, let me read it again. Do not judge, so you'll not be judged. Within that phrase is implied, if you judge, you're going to be judged. But let me take it a step further. He says, for in the way that you judge, by the manner, by the standard that you judge, that very standard then gets imposed on you because of your decision. So first, you really need to understand what a judgment is. The Bible word judge can actually range from making a legal decision, thus rendering a judgment, to forming an opinion. Anytime we measure another person against a standard, this exercise is called judgment. Now, I need to pause there, because some of you are beginning to think, okay, well, what's the difference between me just having a perspective or having an opinion? Here's the difference. A perspective or opinion can always be postured as a question, while a judgment is postured as a fact. In other words, with an opinion, I could say, is it possible that this is what that means? I can posture it as a question. My perspective, well, you know, my truth right now, according to what I know, might be, and I give my perspective. How many of you have ever thought you knew something or evaluated something only to find out later that what you thought you knew and saw was not accurate? Okay, so a perspective or opinion, you can always posture it as a question. But when you've actually made a judgment, you don't want to posture it as a question. You want to declare it as a fact. This is the way it is. This is how the cow ate the cabbage. Y'all okay with all that? For example, let me give you two of the most popular judgments. And I think you'll begin to track with me and see how it begins to become a relationship breacher. It kicks in the door. It breaks down the relationship. Here's number one. I won't treat my children the way my parents treated me. That's number one. Any of you ever thought or did that? Come on. Here's number two. I'll never marry anyone like my father. I'll never marry anyone like my mother. Now, the difficult and the insidious part of a judgment is that many times, even without the verbal expression, it is the attitude of heart that has locked on. You get hurt, dad does something, mom does something, and quietly in the recesses of your heart, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to marry anyone like that. And then guess what happens in your life? You begin to treat your kids the way your parents treated you. Y'all need to smile when I talk this way to you. This is good. This is going to help you. Are you thinking okay? So anytime we measure another person against a standard, that exercise is called a judgment. Now, I also need to ask the question, what is your standard of measuring? Because that's what he said. You judge not lest you be judged, because by the manner you judge, by the standard that you judge, it will be measured out, there's the word, to you. So what standards you levy on others get levied on you. Many times we think of that as, well, that means eternal judgment and I'm standing before. No, it doesn't. It's actually a spiritual principle that gets released into the atmosphere that has the ability to affect your disposition, your attitude, and even your behavior. And all the time you think it's because they did something, when the fact of the, and they did something wrong because you're right, right? Mm-hmm. I'm right. And you think that the reason this behavior is going on is because of them, when the fact is you released a judgment and it has effect even on others' behavior within your circle, within your dynamic, within your relationship. Hope you're tracking, guys, because this is one of the most powerful truths that affect our relationships. We get hurt, and on top of that pain, we make a judgment. I'm right, they're wrong. Why did they do that? Who do they think they are? And we begin to go down that street of animosity, of even vengeance. And we rehearse it time after time in our mind as we're driving to work and as we're going places. We continue to review it. You know, one of the ways you can also know that you have moved, made a judgment and moved into an offense is that it is still an issue to you. When everybody else involved in the situation, it's a no issue anymore. Why? Because it happened a year ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. But to you, it's still alive. And you're still waiting for them to come and ask your forgiveness. Keep waiting. Are y'all okay? I mean, some of you are kind of, I don't know if you're in pain or what. Okay. Okay. You know, when we measure things, most of the world measures by the metric system. One day, the U.S. will catch up. You know, we we have, you know, they have the meter, the liter, the gram, units of length, capacity, and weight. But when we measure, especially something as abstract as a behavior, then we move on to other criteria because the metric system doesn't have a standard that you can measure behavior by. And the most common standard is that of right or wrong. And it's a standard, it's a moral standard determined by, watch, culture, religious laws, and internal heartfelt conviction. Culture, religious laws, and conviction. So along with culture, religious laws, and conviction, many times maturity or your experiences give you a little bit better platform to make an opinion or make a perspective. But here's the downside. Even with those, even with your maturity, we usually judge by what we see and hear. He said this. She did this. Now, the problem with that is this. When Sue does something, I judge her by her actions. When John says something, I judge him by his words. But I judge myself based on my intent rather than my actions. Well, that's not what I meant. I judge myself based on my intent, but I judge others based on their actions. In fact, if my intent is bad, but my actions turn out good, somehow I squeak by on that, then I'll reverse the whole criteria and I'll judge myself by my actions rather than my intent. Do you see the inconsistency found within this process? Let me show you how it works. Give you an illustration. Guys, this isn't going to be a long message, but I guarantee if you'll take it to heart and begin to apply it, it'll absolutely change your relationships. But this is the kind of message that you don't, boy, I hope they're listening. Hey, honey, did you get that? No. This is the kind of message that you have to apply to you. That's how it works. You don't do this on someone else. You do this message to yourself. Okay, here we go. How many of you remember the story of King David? He's older, far from over in his reign, though. Has many sons and many wives and many daughters from different wives. And one of his sons, Absalom, whom you know, and most of you know the story, rose up and he decided it was time for dear old dad to step down and allow him to become the king. So what does Absalom do? He leads an insurrection, a coup d'etat, against his father. Now, how could he do that? Remember, David comes after who? Saul. And you remember, even when Saul was alive, the people gravitated to David. Saul kills his thousands, but David kills his tens of thousands. They gravitated. He was a charismatic leader. So how in the world could some young jerk come along and displace a well-loved dad? How could he garner a following? Here's what Absalom did. He goes and he finds a malcontent. You ever noticed how malcontents seem to hang together? You can put two of them in a room of 1,000 people, and for the end of the evening, they'll find each other. They're over in the corner talking. These are people who have been offended. Oh, there comes that word again. And in this case, offended by David. Someone who's bitter, already discontent, but who has a following. Absalom found just the right guy. His name was Ahithophel. Write that down. Ahithophel. Probably don't want to name your next kid that. He was one of his father's personal advisors, a personal confidant. Now, I first saw that this man's name in the Bible, when I first saw it, I began to ask the question, who is this guy? One of my early morning readings, Bible readings, you know, I was real excited, got up early to read and pray. And I was especially excited because that day I was reading through my Bible. I got to the point in the Bible where the genealogies are. And man, I was really thrilled about getting to read through those. Don't you just love them? And so-and-so begat so-and-so who begat so-and-so. And you think, God, why did you stick this in here? And then I saw this guy's name in one of the genealogies, Ahithophel. And I get the greatest revelation that I've ever received from a genealogy. Probably the only revelation I've had. Ahithophel was Bathsheba's grandfather. Do you remember Bathsheba? Wow, there it is. Now I could see how Absalom swayed Ahithophel to stand against his father. You know, just think of it. You're a grandparent. We're grandparents. You have a beautiful young daughter who's just been married to an uprising, climbing general. And then somebody comes along, a family wrecker, a home wrecker, wrecks the home, takes the wife, has the husband killed. If you were the grandfather of that pretty young thing, I wonder how you'd feel. Angry? Maybe even violent. That pain of that violated marriage so stuck with Ahithophel. He tried, but he just could not find a place for mercy and for forgiveness. He just tried, but he couldn't let David go. Years after the situation happened, it still was haunting him every time he was driving to work. Here comes that little thing floating through his mind, and he reenacts, he rehearses, he mentally rehearses what David did to his daughter, his granddaughter. Incredible pain, unforgiveness. Those continued to grow. And from that particular pain, Ahithophel now finds himself on a side against David, on a side with Absalom. Now, in 2 Samuel 16, Absalom comes to Ahithophel asking his counsel. Let me pause there for a moment. Do you think back to the judgment principle? We refer to it as a boomerang principle. He says, judge not lest you be judged, for in the manner that you judge, it shall be met out to you. In other words, a boomerang, you throw it out, you make that judgment, and now you find yourself doing the very thing that you judge someone else for. You find yourself a dispenser of pain, the very pain that you once received. Okay, don't forget that. Boomerang principle, judgment. That's how it works. So now, Ahithophel, Absalom comes to Ahithophel and needs his counsel. Remember, Ahithophel is wounded. He's feeling the pain. He's made a judgment. He is offended. Over what? What was the offense? Over his daughter, her family being broken up, stolen literally from her husband, taken by the king, and then the husband killed. Okay, think of that little package. Now, listen to Ahithophel's counsel back to Absalom. He says, "Heth, this is what you need. I mean, Absalom, this is what you need to do. Go into your father's concubines, whom he's left in the house, so that all of Israel can hear that you've made yourself odious." What a word. Stinky to your father. In other words, I want you to go in and have sexual relations with all of your father's wives, concubines. In the hands of all who are with you will also be strengthened. Yeah, right. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof in the sight of all of Israel so they could see what he was doing. That's pretty gross, isn't it? All right. The very thing that offended Ahithophel, here's what I want you to see, that wounded him, that brought him such pain, now he's actually encouraging Absalom to go do a similar thing. To violate your father's family. The boomerang has landed. He's now become a participant and even a perpetrator in the offense that offended him. Guys and gals, you got to see this. Because some of you are walking right now in things that you're struggling to overcome, and you're blaming it on someone else when the fact is, a judgment out of your own heart because of what was done to you, that judgment radiated from your own heart, is holding others and even yourself in a destructive behavior pattern. And all the time you think you're right and they're wrong, and you may very well be right. It's even harder to recognize when you are right because you're so focused on being right. Judge not lest you be judged, for in the manner that you judge, by the standard that you judge, it will be measured back to you. And all of a sudden, the pain you once felt, you're now dispensing to others. Let me give it to you in just a couple of quick illustrations. Number one, who are the number one child abusers? Those who have been abused. What is that all about? It's about the principle of judgment. That's how it works. Show it to you on a little different spectrum, more a physiological spectrum. Who are number one alcoholics? Those who are raised in homes of alcoholics. Now, that doesn't have to go that way, and it definitely doesn't always go that way, but I want you to see the picture of the boomerang, how it comes back and lands on us. Now, judgments have two stepchildren. You need to remember these. One is a vow, the other is a curse. A vow is a judgment turned inward. I'll never do that. You don't have to say anything, you can actually think it. You don't have to say anything, you just actually feel it. I'm not going to do that. That's a vow. The second stepchild of a judgment is a curse. While a vow goes inward, a curse goes outward. You'll never be this. You'll never do this. Do you understand, especially when these kinds of words come from people in authority in our lives, what an incredible effect they have upon us? I think present generation and maybe previous to the present generation, the Mills and the Gen Zs have done a good job of correcting that. You know, no, honey, you can do whatever you choose to do, you know. Now, there's some fallacy within that, too. You're 5'1", you're probably not going to be an NBA star no matter what you want to do. One afternoon, I received a telephone call. I've shared this illustration here before from a couple that we worked with in our church, both of them in their 40s. And they were having this kind of ongoing struggle every half a year, every several months, they'd come in for some more help. And they had the reoccurring problem. Here was the problem. The woman was one of these prophetic types, you know, loved to go to these all-night prayer meetings and do all this super spiritual stuff, which I'm encouraging. I love those things. I think they're important. But her husband was more of a practical guy. He was more of a marketplace. He was a banker. You know, and she was always dogging him because he wasn't so spiritual. According to whose standard? I didn't say that. Anyway, she comes in and he comes in, and they sit and talk to me for just a minute. And, you know, I'd heard their story before. I'd read the jacket, their file, so I knew what was coming off. And so I said, man, let's just pray. I didn't know what else to offer them. They've been in 15 times. You know, what else to offer them? So we begin to pray. We're holding hands. We're praying. Now, I don't know how God speaks to you, but, you know, to me, I frequently see things. Sometimes in chart form. It's kind of weird, but, you know, I do. I rarely hear things, but I see things. Anyway, we're praying, and all of a sudden, I'm beginning to see this little, it's like a video clip, kind of go off in my spirit, and I'm kind of watching it. And I'd begin to describe it to them. And I said, I see this little girl, and she's 8 years old. I didn't know how I knew she's eight. I just knew she's eight. She's 8 years old, and she's walking through this field. Does that mean anything to you? Lady says, no, we're praying. And she, they're coming up on a little bridge, and she's reaching down and picking up some pebbles. And does that mean anything to you? No. And she's walking up on the bridge, and she's throwing those pebbles into the water, and she's crying and crying. And does that mean anything to you? No. I'm really getting encouraged about this point. And she's saying, and the moment I begin to speak what that little girl was saying, the wife breaks down crying, and she picks up the chant. I'll never marry anyone like my father. I'll never let a man. You see, she didn't have a mom. Mom died at birth. Dad was a Marine sergeant. And all he knew how to do was train Marines. So she was his little Marine. He'd bark the command and she'd snap to attention and do what he said. How many of you realize that sometimes along the road of life, youngsters, young gals in this case, need tenderness, attention, affection from their dads, from their male roles? Something deep in her heart had been wounded because of how she had been brought up. Those needs never getting met. And into her own heart, she spoke a judgment. What's an internal judgment? What do we call it? A vow. And she spoke that vow into her heart, I'll never do this, I'll never do that. And now as a young woman, she finds herself in a cycle of destructive behavior. And of course, it's because her husband's not spiritual. No, it actually wasn't. It was because of a judgment that had come out of her heart while she was in pain that radiated, put into place, put into gear a spiritual principle that was now operating over her life and even her husband's life. So what do? Well, we stopped and prayed. We broke the judgment. And in place of the judgment, we spoke forgiveness. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to close with that in just a second. Spoke forgiveness. Forgiveness is the key to breaking a judgment. Spoke forgiveness. And then in place of that negative, we speak a positive. What does that sound like? It sounds like, Lord, I ask that you bless my father, give him good relationships. Lord, give him mercy and grace. Take care of him, give him good health. What are we doing? Do you know what a blessing is? It's actually nothing more than a positive judgment. Hey, guess what? Judge not lest you should. Those judgments also come back on you when you're blessing others. Okay, that was extra, but and it was free. The most covert, insidious judgment. Boy, they're hidden. They're sneaky. Many times they don't run through our brains, they run through our emotions. And we make them out of our heart many times rather than through our understanding. And if it hadn't logged onto your understanding, then you think you haven't made it. Well, you can always tell. Why? Because you focus on being right all the time. Now, guys and gals, you got to get this. If you don't get over being right, you're going to run into significant hiccups in your relationships from here on. So pain comes along, somebody does something, say something, and of course, you judge them by what you see and hear, because you know you're right. And that pain enters your heart. And in the midst of that pain, sometimes within a millisecond, the posture of your heart, the attitude of your heart can be changed. You can forgive and find a path of mercy and forgiveness. And all of a sudden, that pain turns into something else. It turns into a place of God's strength in your weakness. Or, in the midst of that pain, you can focus on being right and how you've been so wronged. And after all, I mean, you're the victim. Everything's been done to you. And all of a sudden, in the midst of that pain, you make this sneaky little judgment, sometimes without even knowing it, because you turn the attitude, the posture, face of your heart towards, I'm right. That becomes your focus. That's what settles in your heart. And now you've just turned a wound into an offense. And if you don't get proactive about interrupting that offense and changing that offense, it will continue to activate at different times in your life. It will continue to interrupt and hinder your relationships at the most inopportune times. Okay, I've made a judgment. I see that. What do? You break it. How'd you make it? Well, I made it by standards sometimes. Maybe I didn't even think it all through. I felt the pain was great. And you consciously have to transfer from your focus from being right to your I choose to forgive. How many of you realize forgiveness is a choice, while trust is a process? You mean I can forgive them but not trust them? Here, you bet you can. Well, that'd be another message, wouldn't it? Okay, I'm going to conclude. Let me give you six keys to forgiveness. Teachers always have to have numbers. You know, you've got to have these points. You know, you listen to the more prophetic people, they rarely have a point. Just joking. Except your pastor. He's very good. Okay. Here's these six little thoughts, six little bullet points. I've shared them with you probably 25 times over the last years, but you need to hear them again. Here's number one. Forgiveness is a choice. It's not a feeling. When you least feel like forgiving is probably when you need to choose. It's a choice, not a feeling. Number two, you don't forgive because they're worth it. We forgive because Jesus asked us to forgive. Sometimes we hesitate to forgive because we think it minimizes the hurt that they perpetrated on us, the pain that I've had to feel. You don't know what they put me through. We choose to forgive not because a person is worth it or has earned it, but because Jesus asked us to. Are you okay with that one? Here's number three. You don't forgive out of your own resources, but from the mercy He has given you. Bible says His mercy is new, come on, every morning. Great is Thy faithfulness. Love some of those old hymns. Thy mercy is new every morning. So if you don't have a recent experience with the mercy of God, guess what? You're going to have trouble giving forgiveness. Forgiveness is not like laying an egg. You know, I'm going to plop out this forgiveness. It's simply from the reservoir of your heart where mercy already exists. Why? Because you've received that from God. How many of you have received fresh mercy during this past week from the Lord? Lord, I have done this. I need Your forgiveness. I need Your mercy. Fill me up again, etc. and you cry that prayer before God, and God refills your heart with mercy. And then to give forgiveness, you simply dip a cup into that mercy well of your heart and pour it over the head of the one who has brought you pain. See, forgiveness does not come out of your own resources. Only those who have been forgiven know how to forgive. Are we okay? You got all that? Number four, bullet point four. I'm giving you six little bullet points on forgiveness. When you forgive, you have to release being right. As long as being right takes preeminence over reconciliation, then forgiveness will never be complete. You can have impartial forgiveness or limited forgiveness. I'll forgive you, but are we okay? This is a whole lot easier to teach than it is to do. I mean, I can teach this all day. But when it comes to an offense or a pain in your own heart, it becomes a little bit different, making yourself choose a path of forgiveness, even amidst the pain. Making yourself choose to not look at being right, even though you are right. Number five, the fifth bullet point, Hebrews 10:18 says this. It's a great verse. It says, where there is forgiveness, there no longer remains an offering for sin. Now, that sounds like it belongs in the Old Testament, doesn't it? It doesn't belong in the New Testament. The word offering literally means a price to be paid or something to be done. Let me reread it and insert that definition. Where there is forgiveness, there no longer is a price that has to be paid or something that has to be done. In other words, forgiveness is not I forgive you, but pay me back as soon as you get the money. Forgiveness is not even I forgive you, but don't you ever. When you completely forgive, you're actually releasing that person to the possibility, and might I dare say the probability, they may repeat the behavior. Well, that doesn't sound like a good deal. I forgive them and then they run over me again. Okay, that's when you need to learn how to use boundaries in your life, and that's a completely different teaching. Forgive completely and use boundaries. Because God you're not created to be a doormat and get run over all the time. But you are created to forgive. Why? Because He forgave you. He didn't forgive you if you do something. He didn't forgive you and say, don't ever let it happen again. Okay. Lastly, probably the hardest. Where it's necessary, and I'm talking to you bullet points about forgiveness, forgive yourself. Man, it's one thing to forgive somebody else, but it's another thing to forgive yourself, because you always question the depth of your motivation. Why did I do what I did? And within that context, it becomes much more difficult. We judge others by their actions, but we judge ourselves by our motives, by our intentions. Now, can I say something to you? That kind of sounds humble. I'm hard on myself. I'm trying to keep myself abase, the inability to forgive yourself is really not connected to humility, it's connected to pride. Why do you say that? Because what it really says is, Jesus, you hung on the cross, everything you did was enough for everybody else, but is not enough for me. Did you get that? The number one destructive breachers within relationships are these covert insidious judgments. They creep into our hearts amidst pain. You find couples that have been married a long period of time. And Laura and I have to find ways to, you're going to say things inadvertently or do something. The other person misunderstands it and they get hurt. And these things happen. And you have to find ways to navigate through that so that you don't get stuck on that. You have to find forgiveness as the foundation of your relationships. And when the forgiveness is the foundation, judgments don't have a lasting effect. Why? Because mercy triumphs over the judgment. Are you all okay? Does that mean something to you? And by the way, the number two, breacher, destroyer, breaker of relationships, especially within Christian dimensions, has to do with what we refer to in the Bible as a soul tie. It's where your heart gets tied, your emotions are tied to someone else, and then problems begin to occur. Maybe we'll talk about that another time. Okay, are y'all okay? I'm just trying to get a moment to do some eye-to-eye contact with you and make sure you're okay. We're a small enough group, so dare I ask, do you have a question? How do you apply this if you're not married? It fits in any relationship. Any relationship. And the more intimate the relationship, the deeper the relationship, the more devastating these become and the harder they become. Because when somebody who's really close to you hurts you, that's harder to process and work through than somebody you barely even know, then you just think, you know, I can live without them. But when somebody's close to you, and thus even at the apex of that, it would be a parent-child relationship or a husband-wife relationship. When that other person is the carrier of the pain into your life, they produce the pain, they do something, say something that produces pain, then it becomes much more difficult to process it, to guard it, to not go to judgment and offense, but to choose a path of forgiveness and mercy. Yes, sir. Yeah. I had a pastor friend said to me, he had just found out his wife had been having a 5-year affair with one of his staff members. Not in this country. And he said, Bob, you know, I thought I knew something about forgiveness until I find myself in this situation. Then all of a sudden, he said, I couldn't even find forgiveness anywhere. You know, anger, fear, guilt, shame, all those big words. Guys, I've enjoyed being with you. Hope this is beneficial to you. Promise you, take it to heart, chew it over, listen to it again. It'll become a critical tool in your relationship tool belt. You learn to recognize judgments within your own heart because they are so flippant insidious. They are so sneaky. All of a sudden, you'll find your heart offended. And you think, how did I get there? Well, you had pain, and then pain, somehow you managed to make a judgment, and that judgment turns into an offense. And now it begins to govern. Once you get offended in one area, you get offended in a whole lot of areas. It's kind of got this domino effect with it. Love you guys. Appreciate you. Father, we ask that you take these words and let them find a resting place, a house, a habitation within our hearts, so that in time of need, Father, that the birds of the air can't steal these from us, so that in times of need, these words come back to our memory, so that we can guard our hearts, so that we can be vessels of mercy and forgiveness, ambassadors of mercy and forgiveness, rather than heartbroken, critical, judgmental. Father, cause the dynamic of our relationships to be seen by others so that they know we are followers of Jesus by our love that we have one for another, by our incredible ability to forgive in the most difficult of circumstances. Father, I speak blessing over these men and women, their relationships, their marriages. I thank you for them. In Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Amen.